We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.
All right, hello, Owl Pellets. This is Brian, Kate, and Marshall here by the Owl Pellet. We are excited to be with you today and to have with us Dr. Joey Blackburn. Joey is an assistant professor of agricultural education at Louisiana State University, and he and his co-author, Shane Robinson from Oklahoma State, have done some phenomenal research that we really think has some great application in all of our classrooms. Joey, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. To get the thing started here, Joey, why don't you give us a brief overview of what you guys did and the application you have for ag teachers?
We were interested in high school students' ability to solve problems, and specifically in small gas engines, and we looked at their ability to develop hypotheses, their individual cognitive style, and then two different types of problems or two different complexities of problems.
So you talk about problem solving. So that's a real buzzword we have here in education. We're all supposed to be creating problem solvers. What do you guys mean when you talk about problem solving?
Just in general, the ability of students to solve a variety of problems, everyday life problems, through complex problems, just that the whole process of utilizing information to solve a task.
So in here you're talking about style. What do we do with problem solving style, and how, as we as teachers, how can we use that with our students?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that all of our students learn differently. We can, if we boil that down to the most simple, learning styles, the auditory, visual, kinesthetic, hands-on learners, we've known that for a long time. And cognitive style or problem-solving style with this particular study, this theory, has to do with the way students solve problems. The theory, and I think it's pretty correct, it says that we all have the ability to solve problems, regardless of how intelligent we are, regardless of any other characteristics. It's the preference for how we solve problems. And I think as teachers, that's the important thing to remember. So specifically, this theory labels the students or individuals as more adaptive or more innovative. And part of that, I like, is the simplicity of just the two labels. It's also, for me, it's intuitive with my undergrad students. They understand this, and they can see within themselves the differences. So you think about someone who's on the more adaptive end of this problem-solving style, they're someone who very much enjoys structure in solving problems. They have a do-things-better mentality, versus the more innovative are kind of more, sometimes we think of those students as the outside-of-the-box thinkers. They like to do things differently. An example that I use a lot is I have the students think about going to Walmart and they buy a desk. And you don't just go to Walmart and buy a desk that's ready to go and you load it up in the back of the truck and go. No, it comes in a box that's about 3 inches tall and it's packed in there, and no one knows how in the world they get all those pieces in there, because you can never put them back in the box, because you have to take it back to Walmart. But in general, if we oversimplify this to think about the theory, the more adaptive would likely take the box home, lay out all the parts, and look at the directions and step by step put that desk together. A more innovative individual may be more likely to just dump out all the parts and look at the picture on the box and start putting it together. Now, if we do a little bit of assuming that the more adaptive individual can read the instructions, follow directions, put together correctly, assume that the more innovative individual has the ability to look at that picture and put it together correctly, at the end of the day, they both build a desk. So sometimes we get focused on that product in education, and sometimes it's really that process of getting there that is different. And so that's the realm of this theory, is we have different ways to getting to the same result. And that's why the theory is very clear that we can all solve problems. It's just that style is very different.
Joey, is it possible that the solutions themselves are different, but that the end product is a solution? For example, if in that desk example, the the innovator ended up with a fantastic functional chair that they put together, you know, where the product, the outcome is still a solution to the problem. But would the solutions have to be the same in order for them both to be solving problems effectively?
It would depend, but I guess then that's where it depends on you as the teacher. If your goal and the assignment was to build a desk and they came out with a fantastic chair, the argument then, the problem wasn't solved if we ended up with a chair, no matter how great that chair is. Now, if it's a more open-ended problem and it's here's some pieces to build some piece of furniture, then obviously that would be a problem solved. But I think then that's where we have to think about our goals and directions as teachers on what we want our students to do.
Do you feel like we reward one style more than others? And is there something we should think about as teachers? It just as I hear you talk, I feel like I would reward one type of problem solver as better than the other. How do teachers, you know, if you were helping me and coaching me, what would you say as I design projects to kind of validate both of those thoughts?
Well, I think there's a system reward and then an individual reward. I think in our classrooms, we tend to reward the style that's closest to us. And I think the first step is understanding our own styles as teachers. If I'm more adaptive and I like structure, I like following the rules, and I like color coding, and I like, you know, set linear paths to things, as a teacher, I understand my students that are like that better than the more innovative. And I guess I should probably back up and talk about a couple more characteristics of innovators and the more adaptive. One of the key pieces, especially with this study, is ideas. The more adaptive tend to formulate ideas within the current structure of the problem, very linear, very directed ideas, versus the more innovative, the theory uses the term proliferate, or make up a lot of ideas and possible solutions, and what if it's this, what if it's this, what if it's this, or how about this, or how about this, or how about this. So if I'm a more adaptive teacher and I'm very much into a linear approach in my teaching and problem solving, I could get very aggravated very easily with a student who seemingly is coming up with all kinds of ideas that I don't think are relevant, but they are relevant to that innovative student. The opposite is true. If I'm a very innovative teacher and I think outside the box, that's probably not the best term to use, but I, you know, proliferate ideas, I may get aggravated and just feel like the students that are more adaptive are just not living up to their potential.
Joey, if I'm a teacher and I'm trying to be able to identify these students in my classroom, how am I going to know who's an adapter and who's an innovator? And then what do I do with that information once I am able to identify them?
The cleanest way is administer or have somebody administer the KAI, which is the instrument used to distinguish adapters and innovators. But as a classroom teacher, when you get to know your students, you're going to be able to see some of these subtle hints if you understand some of the characteristics of the more adaptive, more innovative that we were talking about. Probably one of the most surefire ways to know without giving the instrument is putting the students into groups and observing how they work together. If there are major differences in cognitive style when we're trying to solve problems, that's going to arise. The more adaptive, the further you are away from someone on this scale, the more adaptive you are working with someone who is more innovative, the more likely there is to be conflict, just because the two styles are so different in the way we want to go about solving problems. That coupled with the immaturity of our students and the lack of being able to understand how to cope and work through situations is going to kind of rise itself. So as a teacher, we've had some students that, you know, they just don't work well together, and so we purposely don't pair them up. And it could be as simple as their cognitive styles are different enough that there's just conflict. When we know that, then we can now, instead of avoiding putting them in groups, we can help them learn to cope. You know? And in addition to teaching whatever content, we can help to teach them to work better with other individuals.
That's great, Joe. I want to switch gears a little bit. We talked about problem solving, but in this study y'all did, you talk a lot about students creating hypotheses. And the thing I really like about it is this was a small gas engines project you had them working on, and you had them creating hypotheses. And so what are you talking about? I thought hypotheses, you had to have beakers and test tubes and be in a science lab to do that. How does this work with egg mechanics? And how do I as an ag teacher use this kind of stuff with other subjects that I might be teaching?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're taught the hypotheses, the definitions, the educated guess early on in our fifth, sixth grade science, and so that's what we think about hypothesizing. But when we get in the world of problem solving and troubleshooting specifically, if you're not generating hypotheses to try to solve a problem, you're really just going at the problem blindly. If you're not sitting down and thinking before you act, the thinking about the solutions and understanding symptom information, and it doesn't have to be troubleshooting. There's a whole continuum of problems. Even if it's a simple math problem, thinking about what are my possible steps before I just start writing down numbers and going like mad. So really, if we're thinking about hypothesizing, it's encouraging our students to develop questions. So then we're starting to talk about inquiry-based learning, developing questions before instruction occurs. What do I want to know about this subject?
I think that's great. I mean, we're talking about lifelong learning, college career readiness, having students realize you have to kind of think about this kind of stuff before they get started. That's real life kind of stuff. Too often in the classroom, we give them that structure and say, here's your problem, or here's what you think the thing might be. Just do what I tell you. This is the kind of stuff, you know, why is the grass on my lawn dying, or why are my animals sick, or why won't my car start? All those kind of things provide great examples to do that. And so with that, do you have a couple of ideas or hints that you could give ag teachers as they're trying to get their students to start thinking about creating hypotheses when they're doing things, either in ag mechanics or plant science, animal science, or ag business, or whatever else, as they're trying to be more explicit about that with their students?
Yeah, some of it you know, just backs up to what we know is good teaching, understanding the concept of readiness, knowing, you know, what our students are bringing to the table, where they are, what their prior experiences are, and then supplementing that with instruction. It may or may not be the baseline knowledge, but figuring out what we can give them to have enough context to ask questions. And then, obviously, making it interesting for them to want to ask those questions, and then making, you know, use of as many real-life examples as possible. One of the biggest things is going to be helping them to understand what are the right questions to ask, and encouraging them to ask beyond the what questions, and getting, you know, those lower level questions, and getting them to answer or to ask the how, why questions, some of the more higher level questions. And if you have to provide some supplemental knowledge to get them ready to ask those questions, then that may be where we have to start.
Exactly. And I think that's great, because, you know, being able to do this with problem solving is really a tool that we have in ag ed at our fingertips every single day to really create that meaning. So it's not just students learning stuff to pass a test. They're real life stuff that we have. We have this application, whether it might be in our laboratory facilities we have. I mean, it's simple things as, you know, the water line just broke out at the livestock facility. So how are you going to fix that? And use those problems as tools, teaching tools to have happen, or a variety of other kind of things that we have here. So, Joey, as we wrap up today, we really appreciate you coming here and talking to us about this really great study that you guys did, really looking at problem solving, making sure the kind of things that our students are doing out there. What kind of last tips or other ideas that you want to share with ag teachers about this particular topic before we wrap it up today?
The main thing I want to share is to encourage your students to solve problems. A lot of, you know, we hear critical thinking, we hear, you know, higher order thinking, and we have such a neat ability in ag education to do this relatively easily. And one of the things that I see from our pre-service teachers is they get overwhelmed. You know, I use some textbooks that have been around a while, and a lot of the examples are pretty livestock-based or are crop agronomy-based, and they're like, well, my students aren't going to have these type of projects. They're just not from the farm. And so it's thinking about what are the problems they really do experience, and maybe they're not traditional ag problems, but if we can help our students understand how to solve problems, whether that's our students as undergraduates or high school students, I think our goals as educators are met much more readily.
I'm sitting here thinking about my old high school ag teachers. 1,000 years ago when I was in high school ag, My ag teacher told us 1,000 times that agriculture is nothing but, you know, one big problem that gets broken down into a million small problems, and it's those million small problems one thing at a time is really what you start to attack. I think that's the real value we have in ag education, is to really help our students be able to break those things down into those small problems, and gives you motivation, because everybody wants to solve a problem. They may solve it differently, but we really use that to get that motivation going. Well, Joey, we appreciate you being here with us today. It's a great study that you guys did, some great tips here for our ag teachers to use as we go out there. Everybody out there, we encourage you to like this post, follow us on Facebook and iTunes, leave us a comment, let us know what's going on here. On behalf of all of our Ag Pellet crew here, Marshall, Kate, this is Brian saying thank you very much. We look forward to it, and have a great day.
We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.